The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
Hello and welcome to another Yes to Life show. I'm Robin Daly, the founder of the UK charity Yes to Life, which supports people with cancer in taking an integrative approach to their treatment, one which includes a massive range of approaches to support every aspect of health and well-being. This week's show is an anniversary celebration. It's 10 years since Yes to Life partnered with Cancer Options to provide a helpline service offering personalised information on the best options for a caller's particular situation. The best options from both within and outside of conventional medicine. Cancer Options and its principal, Patricia Pete, are, in my opinion, the finest and the broadest source of unbiased, personalised information on cancer treatment choices in the UK. It's been a brilliant partnership, which has made so much possible and definitely something worth celebrating. So I'm talking to Patricia over the phone at Cancer Options in Nottinghamshire. Hi, Patricia. Thanks for coming on the show. This is a very auspicious occasion.
I'm very glad to hear it, Robin. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, we're here celebrating 10 years of collaboration between Cancer Options and Yes to Life. 10 years, it represents a lot of people helped to get information to make their lives better or longer or even both. So it's quite a thought and something to be proud of, I'd say.
Yeah, absolutely. And hasn't it flown?
Hasn't it just flown?
It's quite stunning, really. Yeah. Such a lot has happened, such a lot has changed, yes.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, it's not often we pause and look back, is it? It's kind of quite good to do that occasionally.
I think it is, actually, because you say things change and you don't necessarily notice, you just battle on thinking, oh, you know, there's so much more to do. But actually, a lot has happened. So, yeah. So, right from the start, I was determined that people shouldn't have to go through the practically impossible task of trying to find out from the internet what was out there and what could help them. And the way we were able to do this was through you at Cancer Options. So our fledgling helpline, by which I mean me, was able to refer people to you and very quickly offer people a focused selection of best options. And this was one of my primary aims for the charity and from my own personal experience. And I know just how important it really is.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it was a very important thing you set out to achieve. You achieved it very quickly, and I think one of the things I think we can be proudest of is the way things have developed very professionally and safely, and guiding people well.
Mm. Yeah, very important. So I wanted to take this opportunity to highlight one thing, which is that what's made the financial help that we've been able to give to people over the years far more valuable has been the great discounts we've received from people as a charity. And Cancer Options is right there at the head of this. And the very reasonable rates you've charged us as a charity have helped us to help far more people to benefit from the specialised information you supply. So big personal thank you to you for this. No business has to do this stuff, so it's extraordinarily generous and helpful of you.
You're very welcome. It's been very nice for us that we can sort of say to people, okay, things are tight. They often are when you're dealing with something like cancer. You don't have to worry about making those first steps and getting yourself on the road here.
Yeah, very important. Okay, so look, when you set up Cancer Options, I don't think the word integrative had ever been thought up as a description for what we're up to here, combining conventional methods and CAM in a judicious way. And nevertheless, integrative medicine was what you were involved with right from the start. you were showing people the strengths of both approaches and how they could be combined to advantage. So what got you started on this path?
Yeah, I don't even know at the beginning or any of that was the path I was going on, to be quite honest. And what got me started on the path was very much the unanswered questions that people came to the oncology clinic with. And people saying, what can I do for myself? I've heard about this. Is this any good? I've heard about that. You know, they thought that as doctors and nurses, we would have at least have some working knowledge of different things that was going on. And of course, no, we didn't. And we would very much brush everything aside, or I have to say at times ridicule it in the staff room. And it was only when I began to get to know people who were looking at different things and, you know, working their own programs out and seeing that actually, you know what, there's something worth looking at here. You know, these people are doing well both physically and psychologically. And that's why I went out to sort of find out what was out there. And you know, to be fair, I think much more so in sort of when I started 18 years ago, it was quite a mess.
Yes.
Quite a mess, you know, in terms of what was available, how things were presented, the science behind them, and trying to work out, you know, what is a reasonable, practical and ethical way forward. You know, it's taken time. Yeah. You know, it really has been an experience that does it. So yeah, so it was not being able to address people's needs, which spurred me on initially. And I've always been sort of very interested in you know, I had a sort of period away from oncology when I went to work in palliative care, and they were much more open. And I learned a lot there. And then when I went back to the oncology setting and chemotherapy clinics, I realised they hadn't moved forward at all, which came as a bit of a shock. So, it was just taking that. I realised that I was never going to be able to do or achieve anything if I stayed within the setting that I was. That would just be completely restrictive and very frustrating.
Right.
So I made a slightly mad decision to go it alone.
Well, you're still here. You survived.
Yes.
It's interesting, that thing about palliative care, isn't it? I mean, the whole hospice movement is doing things which are just like completely outside the bubble of the NHS, really. They're doing the job much better. And, as you say, oncology, for some reason, stays a kind of rather brutal outfit on its own, really not looking outside the box. And, there is so much more care being done, even within the NHS, if you go to another department.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what surprises a lot of people and is if you're on a partner phrase journey, it does describe it, so we have to use it, but a journey through oncology and you're told, you know, oh, don't take anything, nothing's going to work for you, nothing helps, we'd be concerned about that, blah, 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 please just stick to, you know, the set routes that we have here for you, which is very linear. When people get to a point then, and it can be quite sudden, when suddenly, okay, we've run out of options now, you know, we'll put you here with the palliative team, and this course of action that you've been on is now ceasing.
Right.
And it can be quite abrupt.
Yeah.
And you know, and I used to get a lot of, you know, when I was in oncology, because you kind of have in your head, we knew the limitations and the failings of what we were doing, and you kind of knew where that was going. And a lot of the time, you know, that you'd be in the oncology room and the oncologist was like, okay, you know, okay, it's not about that drug's no longer working. It's not, you know, there's nothing else worth trying, so that's it. And, you know, the absolute, I think, shock of people are sort of, hang on a minute, I didn't realise this is where we were going so quickly. And hang on, but you stopped me from doing anything to help myself. And then there's just some mad dashing, you know, crikey, I'm. And people were at times generally sort of, you know, upset, annoyed, angry. But, you know, hang on, I didn't realise that this was quite as, you know, limited as it is. I think people are far more aware now of what they're getting into. No, I think as well, oncologists are probably, I think, it, you know, back in my early days in oncology, I think a lot was left unsaid. And I think oncologists are much better now at sort of setting out that this is limited.
Yeah.
Except we can take you so far, but, you know, hopefully still not restricting people.
Yeah, Yeah, the ability to be realistic about chemotherapy and things is definitely improved, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's. I think that's very helpful because people need to have choices, you know. And I don't actually think there's not much in terms of alternative. You know, I don't think there's such a thing as alternative medicine. I think there is. There's just choices.
Right.
There are, you know, and if people look at what they're being offered in terms of, you know, say you've got a, you know, stage 4 lung cancer and you're being offered cisplatin chemotherapy, you might well look at that and think, you know, that's not really a great option. I'm potentially going to have more detriment than value from that, and it might actually, you know, kind of make things worse for me. So I'm not going to do that. I may do other things. So that kind of those other things then become classified as alternative treatment. And they're not alternatives, they're just different choices.
Right. Okay, so as we know, the pace of change in healthcare is glacially slow, particularly in the UK. In the course of the decade, as you said, some things have actually changed. Looking first at the environment in which we're operating, Cancer Options and Yes Life, what would you say has most noticeably changed here?
Right, well, I think what's happening, obviously, very clearly, the amount of information that's available, with all the good work you've done and lots of other people, the amount of information that's out there has increased tremendously. The amount of research-based information and you know, moving from the theoretical to, you know, research-supported, more science-based, yeah, this is why this makes sense, this is why this works,
yes,
has changed tremendously. And people are more armed with what are the different elements that they can potentially use and potentially have to move that forward. And we have seen and are seeing a sea change in the way, and I think it's the momentum is building. It's been slow, but it's building now in terms of actually, yeah, instead of sort of saying diet makes no difference whatsoever, eat what you like. There's a lot more coming in terms of survivorship, lifestyle, etc., coming in from the medical profession. Mm. Not to anything like to the point of pure integrated support from day one, which is, you know, you and I have always said that's what we want.
Yeah.
You want an integrative specialist in every oncology clinic, somebody who can work with people to make sure that, you know, that you know, they get a full program to support themselves and mind-body support, and it's all helpful and interactive with the treatment they're having.
Mm.
You know, so we're a long way off that. Again, it comes down to, you know, it's they're very focused on individual approaches, individual compounds and measuring, etc. And some of the things are in clinical study, so that's going to take forever.
Right.
But otherwise, I think there's a recognition that, you know, what is being driven by, you know, customer need and customer requirements is always what generates change.
Mm-hmm. And the public are becoming more and more aware of the direct link between how they're living and things like cancer.
Very much so. I think there's more now, not just ourselves, but there's a lot more reliable sources of information. And the big thing for me, as a practitioner, when I sit down to work with somebody, and, you know, it's very, very individual, how you operate, how you work with an individual person. The whole element of functional medicine, testing, finding out what's happening for the client, you know, doing functional testing to find out once they finish their chemotherapy, what are the challenges in the body, what are the imbalances, how much inflammation is there, how much is that environment still leaning towards being an environment that cancer cells can thrive in. So being able to work and measure what's taking place has improved enormously.
Yes,
and that's both, you know, reassuring as a practitioner, and there's a great tendency, you know, it's just because it's complementary medicine, you know, so it doesn't say, you know, think about it is wonderful. And I have a great issue with people having programs and being able to work in a way that suits them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great tendency amongst the complementary world for when people start to gather information from lots of different sources, That can be very helpful. There's also a great tendency towards, are you doing this? Are you doing this? Oh, have you heard about that? To the point where you just can't possibly do enough. And then
yes.
That program and those decisions become driven by stress rather than knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And the more fear-based.
Yes.
That, gosh, you know, if I don't do that, I'm going to say, am I juicing enough each day? Am I? And, the concept of getting up every morning stressed by a program that's supposed to make you better, I think is a failing of, it's where complementary medicine can fail. So, and I think it's very much people have to have a program that they can work with that enhances their life as well, because everything about a good life is healing. Mm. And that's having time to relax and time to breathe and time to play with the kids or the grandkids. And get the job done as well.
Yeah. Well, very, very good point indeed. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's definitely where CAM was. It used to be you just accumulate more and more things that you had to do. But as you say, the testing, in a way, has been one of the ways out of this, to actually know what you need to do is really great, isn't it? And that's a big advance.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's very enlightening. And, I've always said, it's been one of my old sayings, really, is, integrated medicine, surviving any chronic disease, the medical world is not great at getting people better from chronic diseases. If you look right across the board, Parkinson's, MS, rheumatoid arthritis, people are not being healed.
No.
These things are not getting better. There is symptom control, there's some improvements, there's some maintenance, but it's not really about getting better. The people who get better, nobody gets somebody else better. Our job is to provide the information and tools that people need to become their own healers. And that is, so to me, integrative medicine is not about sort of saying to someone, here's a really big, expensive program that's nigh on impossible for you to manage.
Mm-hmm.
It's here's what you need on every, here's the information you need to work with us on every level. So you can learn how to become your own healer. Mm-hmm. You can learn about yourself and never mind what anybody else is doing.
Right.
That's my mantra.
Right. Great. Very right with you there. Okay, so you've already mentioned that one of the things that's moved on substantially over the last decade has been the science behind cancer, and particularly behind natural medicine. So looking at cancer itself, the wind has somewhat gone out of the sails of the great gene hunt. There was so much certainty behind this about 10 years ago. What went wrong?
I have to say, if you look back at the history of how we've approached cancer and how we've dealt with it, it's been a sort of repeated cycles of failure, a bit like reforming the NHS, if you like. Everyone comes in with a slightly different version, and then 10 years later, they're all scratching their heads and going, okay, let's try a slightly different way of looking at this again.
Yeah.
So we had the original. Yeah, the original, let's blot it to bits of chemotherapy, which, I mean, when you look at that originating from mustard gas in the First World War,
Yes. It's
kind of, okay. Mustine is a chemotherapy I used to use many years ago.
Yeah.
So to think, obviously, have some mustard gas to get better, that's weird. So we went from that traditional immunotherapy many years ago with the interleukins. I remember when the interleukin treatments came along for kidney cancer, like, yes, this is going to be fantastic. No, it's not. Side effects too severe to cope with. Then, of course, there was a great gene hunt, looking at genetics. And that actually, although it didn't work, it taught us a tremendous amount about cancer. In that we, I think we began to discover then how little we knew.
Right.
And that by identifying a gene, and this is where it's all going, where it's all going to evolve to, by identifying a gene, you can't apply that to everyone who's got pancreatic cancer or lung cancer or breast cancer, because they are, the genetic and physiological makeup of that cancer is entirely different. So that was really, and there were so many genetic aberrations within each cancer that just identifying one element didn't work. But the genomic mapping has been useful at the moment for the immunotherapy. So we've kind of, so the basis there of the standard chemo radiotherapy has always been there. been some deviation. So we've moved on now to immunotherapy, which again, you know, is being hailed as the dawn of the new age. And of course, a very seductive thought, isn't it? We now have drugs that will help the immune system to fight against cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great in theory. The practice is not functioning terribly well yet again, which is a shame. Certainly, the ability to genetically map and identify the targets and drivers that are driving that individual cancer, and then to match that to a target drug is ideal. So, for example, with the PD-L1 inhibitors, cancer very cleverly, you know, all integrated work is about changing the environment that cancer exists in.
Yes.
Cancer very cleverly manipulates its environment. It will pull in immune cells. It will switch off the immune system. It will scramble the signals of inflammation. It will block certain pathways. So, you know, with a PD-L1 drug, for example, that blocks the blocker, which should then allow the immune system, the T cells, the dendritic cells, to really get going and start to work against cancer. Because anybody surviving cancer long term, it's got to be the immune system that's doing it.
Right.
So, sounds great, all very expensive. But what they're finding is that because a lot of the time, because you go down this linear, okay, you're going to have chemotherapy. When that fails, you can have another chemotherapy. When that fails, you can probably move on to immunotherapy. Or if it's one of the cancers that, you know, there's hardly any viable treatments for, you can go straight on immunotherapy. Either that way, through the process of treatment, or because they've got cancer in the first place, the person has a suppressed immune system. So you give something to, you know, that allows the immune system to work, but unless you're actually working with the immune system as well and working on the environment so that that immune system is allowed to work, it's not surprising that things are not working out as well as they should.
Mm.
So, sadly, the current response rate for immunotherapies across the board is about 20%.
Okay.
Which is really sad,
yeah.
and not very good. 80% of people are having immunotherapies and not responding, and that's a lot of side effects. You know, I've always said, you know, the human cost of cancer treatment in the UK is too high.
Right.
It's too high for people. They can't, you know, they should be subjected to you know, the sort of, you know, I mean, talk about, you know, integrated medicine. Well, this is experimentation itself.
Yes.
So that, you know, so they've absolutely, so it's 20%. And for some people, the immunotherapies are working for about 3 months and then stopping. For some people, a small number of people, they're getting long-term response immunotherapies, and that's fantastic. But what's coming through in research, and it's, you know, it really isn't rocket science, is that T-cell exhaustion, the immune cells themselves are working for a short period of time and then just collapsing. Because they need immune support, they need oxygen therapy, they need immune, you know, they need all the things that integrative medicine does.
Mm.
And when those things are put, you know, when you get the whole combination of things put in together, that, you know, that in my experience is when you see very good results.
Mm.
So that's where we're at the moment. And I think, you know, I think immunotherapy could be the way forward for integrative medicine. It's certainly what we see in other countries. That other countries' ability to look at the whole situation and the environment and away from just the, okay, we have this one drug, what is this one drug going to do?
Right.
You know, we absolutely see the rewards that people get from that.
So you think that actually these drugs have got a lot more potential than they're actually realising because of the way they're using them?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. We've never, you know, places you go to around the world, we never look beyond why is this drug not working? What's happening in the body? We just go, that drug's not working. Okay, resistance has developed. Well, what is resistance? What's happening? What's happening in that environment? Don't just, you know, we just move on to the next drug and to the next drug. That's why we very quickly run out. You know, I think we have to be wider, broader, and cleverer. And that has got to come. That has clearly got to come from an integration approach. We can't continue with a drug only based approach to dealing with cancer.
Right. Okay. Well, meanwhile, as the genes have run out of steam, the metabolic view of cancer has really come back again to quite an extent. It's being taken seriously in a lot of top research institutes, and it's leading to some interesting developments, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, great to see that, you know, the theories and some of the ideas in the past on the, yes, it's not just seems like, well, you know, that seems to be a good idea, make common sense, etc. The whole concept that you can influence cancer metabolically and influence it quite significantly, you know, the science and the evidence behind that now is coming through very, very strongly. And, you know, the fact that, you know, you can change the body's environment. Cancer cells can be influenced by that environment. You know, the whole point is, you know, it's like a game of chess. You need as many clever moves on your side. And making cancer cells vulnerable to, whether it's a wholly natural approach or it's an integrative approach, but making them vulnerable to that and making them respond, you know, just get so many benefits now by, you know, reducing glucose. As you know, I don't know why on earth, with the amount of evidence there is, we still get the medical profession sort of contesting that. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the most not clued up lay person knows that doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Let's hope that it eventually breaks the barrier through into mainstream medicine. I think, you know, there certainly is beginning to, with the more forward-thinking practitioners, certainly some of these quite famous GPs, and our Professor Thomas, our lone oncologist who supports lifestyle medicine, are talking seriously about all this kind of these kind of issues.
Yeah, absolutely. Your conference, you know, it was just great to hear people, you know, like these doctors sit up and sort of say, actually, yeah, you know, this is right, you know, you are absolutely right, there's benefits we have. And I tell you what was interesting about the conference as well, and it's not surprising, you know, when you review the whole of how we've dealt with cancer and how the public have been dealt with, in, you know, particularly in this country. But, you know, there were some people in the audience who I think were kind of like, you know, we're actually quite blinking annoyed about this. Mm. You know, we are not pleased. We are kind of well on with knowledge. This makes perfect sense to us. Why are you blocking, you know, what we're trying to do? Yeah. And, of course, you know, the doctors who were there were the converted and pioneers of this.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, to the general kind of, people are aware and, you know, and have had enough.
Yeah,
they don't want their choices. Of course, and you know, anybody, you know, totally commend the medical profession for wanting to stop anybody doing something stupid, something dangerous, something misguided, or indeed lining the pockets of somebody who's wanting to make a load of money out of them. Of course, you know, we want to guide people away from that, but we've got to stop throwing the baby out of the bathwater.
Oh, you're right.
That's just not good enough anymore.
I agree. Anyway, I think it's heartening for people to see at least a few medics now standing up for common sense here, which, you know, that is really inspiring to see. And I hope it's the vanguard of change, basically. So I wanted to speak a bit about diet. It's always been the hot potato of kind of alternative cancer treatments. You know, Max Gerson onwards has been touted as the answer on the one side and as absolute drivel on the other side. Well, you know, in the last 10 years, there's been the rise of the ketogenic diet, which is, of course, an orthodox treatment for other conditions. And it's actually shown a lot of promise, and it's also been taken quite seriously by, again, top science research centres. I think it's made quite an impression, really, and it's the first diet, I think, that's really kind of made it into the mainstream.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the, you know, and it has been surprising, actually. I think we all, when it came along, having, you know, we're all kind of on the Mediterranean-based side of things, and not non, you know, extreme sort of don't work. I think certainly there's a bit of eye rolling going on. Oh God, what's this now? And really, so yeah, you know, I certainly approach everything with a degree of skepticism. I think that's a healthy thing to do, but it has absolutely proven itself in terms of making a measurable impact. Mm. And not all diets do that. Mm. Unfortunately, diets alone is just not sufficient. But, you know, the ketogenic diet does make a measurable impact. There's a lot to be learned and a lot of questions to be asked about, long-term use, et cetera, and imbalances that can throw up, et cetera. But, you know, in terms of if you've got an active cancer and two of the big things you want to do is cut off its supply lines. You know, you want to cut off angiogenesis, you want to cut off its blood supply, and you want to cut off its glucose supply. Mm. Do that, you're going to make an impact. For sure. So, yeah, and, you know, the NHS, Cancer Research UK have got it in clinical study.
Are they?
For brain tumours.
Good to hear.
So, yeah, very good. And quite a lot of other things as well, you know, credits where it's due.
Mm.
Turmeric, of course, you know, which has got so much evidence already of working, you know, on in so many different ways in terms of the immune system, anti-inflammatory, altering genetic expression, which is very important. So, yeah, you know, things are starting to happen. What isn't happening yet is that measuring the whole program together.
Yes.
You know, which is where I think you're going to see. You know, I've banged on about this for years.
Right.
Measure the method. Don't individualize out individual things and sort of measure. Okay, if you use that alone, you're going to make this much difference. That's not the point.
No.
Exactly, you know, it has to be a diverse approach against cancer all the time.
Well, a way to go before we get to that. But,
most of the clinics where we see integrated clinics where the ones where you do, not all of them, of course, but the ones where you do see some pretty decent results, I think ketogenic is being embraced right across the board. Mm. In terms of particularly, alongside treatments, alongside chemotherapies, and also, you know, looking at things like fasting,
yes.
Which again, the medical profession is measuring and interested in.
Yes.
Fasting is very surprising in what the effect that it has.
Yes.
Not just in terms of making the cancer cells vulnerable, but fasting before chemotherapy administration. Massively reducing side effects.
Yeah.
Very, you know, surprising to the extent that it did. It took me by surprise that, you know, people sort of, you know, really, really making major improvements in how they are. So, so much there that is valid and very, very well worth considering.
Mm-hmm. I think, in a way, the exciting thing about ketogenics and fasting is that they're a kind of zero cost intervention that you can simply add in to regular bog standard medicine and make it way better.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't get much cheaper than not doing anything, does it?
No.
Absolutely. But, you know, you look at Michael Mosley's stuff and the way that, you know, fasting, if you look at, you know, the how cancer cells thrive in the body, and it's their interaction with the extracellular environment is so important to cancer cells, and that is enhanced. You know, the real thing, you know, you can knock out, you get someone chemotherapy, you can knock out a lot of circulating cancer cells, you can get cancer cell counts to come down, you can make quite an impression, and it's very heartening, and everyone's extremely happy about that. Tumors shrink on scans, but it's getting to the stem cells is the real key.
Yes.
And chemotherapy and, you know, immunotherapies, we don't know yet, but getting to the stem cells, the cells that the sort of minute, you know, subpopulation of cells that will survive these treatments and generate recurrence. You know, stem cells hide in the body where there's least oxygen, where there's greater glucose, where there's most acidity every time. So altering that environment will, you know, enable stem cells to be made, you know, to be unmasked, be made vulnerable, and for people to be able to get out there, because that's the real key to surviving long term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Another area which is in a way is come on along with the wave of interest in metabolic theory is the whole area of repurposed drugs, which is kind of, it's been there forever, but nobody's taken any interest in it. But suddenly now, is generating a lot of interest, both amongst people with cancer and amongst research institutes. So that's, again, quite a new and strong player in the field, really, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. And, you know, it's a great layer to be able to add into people's programs as well. So,
yes.
You know, people are not just relying on, you know, you look at your different layers and you start off with, you know, nutrition and exercise and oxygen and build out with supplements and perhaps, you know, maybe intravenous turmeric, something like that. To be able to then add in a repurposed drug, which has an anti-cancer effect, but is not going to cause, you know, much in the way of side effects. You know, I'm a massive fan of low-dose naltrexone, which, you know, I talked about T-cell exhaustion. Professor Dalgleisha of St. George's research, you know, showed very clearly that naltrexone reduces inflammation and promotes T-cells, etc. So, you know, to have those in as an extra layer, whether it's an extra layer to work alongside the chemotherapy, an extra layer to when you're putting in, you know, the survivorship program following treatment, or indeed for someone who's in complete remission and preventing a recurrence, it's a very, you know, it's always very heartening to be able to add that layer in. And so, you know, some will say, and it's interesting. It's very interesting because, you know, like the Care Oncology Clinic is an antibiotic, and, you know, recent research has shown that, you know, there's a bacteria that's being implicated quite heavily now with colon cancer. So, you know, whereas you might think, well, actually, if you want to take an antibiotic because it affects the gut, well, you can make up for that with probiotics. But actually, it makes sense if you've got the knowledge that, yeah, there may be potential bacteria implicated, that's indicated. You know, they're using statins. Again, you know, most of us look at statins and go, oh, no, thank you very much. But statins have a surprising amount of anti-cancer properties. And, you know, like with a hormonal estrogen-driven cancer, statins will, when you block off estrogens or reduce estrogens, if the cancer is able to manipulate the environment, it can break down cholesterol into estrogen. So, you know, it makes perfect sense that statin will work in that way. So, there's, you know, it's this game of chess of putting enough of these different pieces on the table. And, some of them, it's a great addition, I think, really. And I hope doctors will. It's getting this level of evidence base, isn't it? Particularly with the repurposed drugs is, you know, our doctors, particularly our GPs, I think, are being more and more restricted now on what they can give and what they're allowed to give. So, you know, it's not on the list they can't. So there's not a great avenue for them to sort of look at things and sort of say, yeah, you know, okay, there's a certain amount of evidence. It's clear, it's safe, it's cheap, it's not going to cause you any problems. Yeah, I'm happy to give that a go. That actually is integrated medicine moves forward. That's what we're seeing is being more and more restricted. Doctors have to go to doctors don't have much flexibility, to be honest. They just have to go to their practice and say, I'm allowed to do this now or not. So, you know, it's I don't know how we're going to get around that. Well, I do know how we're going to get around it. If there was a hunger and a want to get around all of this, would because we know that evidence base, you know, is largely made up of large randomized double blind trials. And then if your evidence base isn't large randomized double blind trials, you know, you do just get the shrug of the shoulders, say, yeah, there's some studies, but they're not big enough, they're never enough. So rather than all the research money to be directed through to producing new drugs, how about some of that, you know, a few quid that Cancer Research UK get per year, perhaps, you know, putting it into some of these things and looking at these things that, you know, are off licence, aren't going to generate, you know, a return in any great sense, but may, you know, have terrific potential. That will clearly be, a very reasonable way forward. And interesting, I was just watching, I've forgotten his name, the guy who's doing the documentary, I was watching his interview yesterday with a doctor who'd been working in oncology, and the question always comes up of cost. You know, your two questions that will probably come from the medical profession is, does it interfere with what they're doing?
Yeah.
Most of the time, we can prove very well it'll enhance it. It'll provide a greater environment for their drugs to work, so that's not going to be an issue. Does it cause harm? I have very honestly, 18 years, I can't tell you how many people, hundreds, thousands, roughly in the thousands. Things that have caused potential harm have not come from the, from the integrative world, rarely, if at all, compared to the number of people who suffer side effects. And then, so cost. I could absolutely guarantee if Cancer Research UK wanted to put some integrated programs into research and put some money behind it, it would get proven on every single level that it helps physically, psychologically, emotionally, it helps with side effects, it helps recovery, and it will eventually help with survivorship long term. And importantly, it could save the NHS potentially a load of money.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I get a bit annoyed. I know everything costs money, and stuff in the in the integrated world costs money. Of course, it does. And there's this rolling of the eyes by doctors in terms of, oh, don't go and talk to them. You're just going to waste your money. This isn't going to work. How much money are they spending on treating people?
Hmm.
What was it in the paper last week? Over £1,000 for a bottle of mouthwash. The NHS are buying from Boots.
Really?
Yeah. Over £1,000 because the NHS really needs to get its sourcing sorted out.
Yeah.
You know, so that's another soapbox. No, there's plenty of money they need in it.
Another program for that.
Yeah. So, I can honestly source somebody a bottle of mouthwash that will do the same thing. It isn't going to cost over £1,000. Give me a shout, problem. I just get the hypocrisy gets a bit annoying at times.
Mm-hmm.
The moving of the goalposts.
Well, I think, if Cancer Research UK has any kind of role, I would say it's to not be frightfully excited about all the profit-driven stuff that's going on with the pharmaceuticals. You can leave them to deal with that. They could be trialing the things that nobody else will trial because they're a charity, and that's what they should be doing, supporting people. And, these drugs, they cost nothing, actually. And the amount of money they could potentially save in terms of, people who go on through all sorts of horrendous treatments and then die because they don't work, is just enormous, quite apart from the amount of improvement they could bring to people's lives and the length of their lives. So, Cancer Research UK, step up to the plate, please.
Yeah, absolutely. Give them a call. They never have. I remember thinking back to my early days, I was massively enthusiastic and I thought I was going to change the world. God, I was so naive.
Maybe you have.
Well, I'm going to change the world a bit more, a bit faster. So I do several things. I used to write to Ron Marsden every year and ask him if he wanted me to go and do a talk for them. On what I've discovered in the integrative world. After about 5 to 6 years, I gave up because they never answered. And on a couple of times, I would be reading stuff about some, quacky alternative medicine that's put across on Cancer Research UK. And I'd ring them up and I'd say, actually, I've just read what you said about this. I actually know a fair bit about it. My experience of it is quite different. How did you come to this conclusion? How did you do your research? Which is interesting when you think about it, Robin, isn't it?
It is.
How did they come to their conclusion? And they said, oh, we read it on the internet. Right. I said, okay, yeah, that's really research-based evidence. Good, I like that. But obviously, you are Cancer Research UK, so anyone's going to believe what you say. I said, would you like to hear my experience of this and the evidence behind it? And again, no, thank you very much. And that would be the end of the phone call. So yeah, it's an interesting world. 18 years now of working alongside people. Do you know how often an oncologist has called me to ask me about what we're doing and what we're recommending and, you know, how we know that it's kind of going to be safe and effective and all that.
I can probably count it on one hand.
You won't even need a finger. You won't even need one finger.
Oh, really? Bad as that?
No, never once. Mm. Never once. Even when people have done brilliantly,
right.
And, you know, you get some people who just, you know, it all falls into place. As Prince Harry would say, the stars align.
Mm.
And it all works, and they're here years later, and the unconscious will go, the most you ever get is, oh, right, okay, well, you know, keep on doing what you're doing.
Mm. No, right. That's top praise. Yeah.
We take what we can get, but honestly, pick the phone up, give the call.
All right, well, look, we're getting towards the end of time. I don't want the show to end without acknowledging another very important Cancer Options Yes to Life collaboration, and I'm talking about The Cancer Revolution, our book about integrative medicine. Your expertise and overview are absolutely central to the success that it's been. It's had brilliant reviews all round. It's just been reprinted to meet demand. A huge number of people have benefited from the information and resources that are in there. The charity continues to benefit financially from sales, but meanwhile, you haven't seen a penny for your efforts. So, a massive thanks to you.
My accountant sits weeping in the corner. I'm just what are you doing?
Anyway, look, huge thanks to you for your help with this important project. I hope it's been helpful to you in other ways anyway. But
Of course, yeah. No, it has. It's been great. To be honest, I must say, when it was first published, I kind of thought, oh, God, here we go.
Yeah.
You know, hard time. I was frankly dreading it. I really was. And then nothing happened. And we go, okay. that in itself, that one factor in itself is a major step forward.
It is.
You know, because in the early days, I'd get slated for sort of saying broccoli's good.
Yeah.
You know, eat your broccoli and, you know. So that is a major step forward. But the big thing for us, and the lovely thing is, when I, as you say, there was no integrative medicine. So we've kind of driven this as a, you know, not alternative medicine, but actually, you know, integrate, have choices right across the board. You know, I don't mind what people do in terms of how they, you know, as long as they've got good information to make the choices from. So, you know, to me, it's really about supporting people in the way that they want to deal with their cancer. It's not down to me. So, but you know, back in the day, there was kind of a lot of skepticism from people and the mistrust and kind of, look, surely if this was valid, the doctors would know about it. They'd tell us about it.
Right.
If the doctor criticised it at all, they'd go, oh, no, I've been told not to, you know, so that's that. And there was quite a lot of having to talk about and sell why an integrative approach actually can be beneficial and make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And now I don't often have to do that at all.
Right.
You know, people come along and they are, you know, they're kind of like, yeah, I know, I'm there already, I've got it. Yeah. You know, I've started, I'm clued up. We have to, you know, we're more the fine-tuning and, you know, testing and sorting out exactly where, you know, where the different elements lie for them. But it's not often, though, I have to take someone from stage one. I sometimes get people come along, they're so clued up, I'm thinking, you know, I hope I can bring some value to this. Because
right.
They're like, I'm doing that. Okay. Give it, you know. Oh, and then I come up, oh, you know, I thought there's something they haven't heard of. Yes. Hallelujah.
Well, it's really heartening, isn't it? Actually, it does show how much the environment has changed, because you're dead right. Yeah, nobody had any idea about this stuff 10 years ago. Really, very few did. But, you know, yeah, as you say, it's the same for us and our helpline. Many people are calling us almost at day one now, rather than when they're absolutely desperate at the end of every single treatment the NHS could throw at them. So that's really good. And people are very much more proactive.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And certainly, you know, I mean, you know, as we said, you know, our dream was always to have integrative approaches, you know, right there from day one. The minute someone's diagnosed with cancer, sort of, okay, this is what the doctors do, this is what you can do, and here's all the information and help you need to make that happen. And, that will always be the aim. And, I hope one day that does happen.
I think the cancer revolution is doing a good job stopping some of the gap. And it's obviously much appreciated. It's still ranked with 4.8 stars out of 5 and often pops into the top 10 in oncology on Amazon still. So, it's doing incredibly well.
Yeah, that's pretty good, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. All right. Well, look, we're going to end it there. Thanks very much indeed. Yes, life service would have been so much less over the last 10 years without the expertise of Cancer Options to call on. So I'm looking forward very much to the next 10 years, and I say we ought to just pop a date in the diary to do another show to celebrate our 20th.
Okay, yeah. Oh, there's a thought, yes, indeed. It'd be very interesting to sit here in another 10 years' time and looking back 10 years, wow, it's been a hell of a lot of work, and... the amount of research and interest now compared to 10 years ago is phenomenal. So as that continues, can you imagine what we will know about cancer and how to deal with it in 10 years' time?
I think
that'll be brilliant. That'll be so brilliant.
Actually pretty good, aren't they?
Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you very much indeed, Patricia.
My pleasure.
When I suggested to Patricia that she has actually changed the world, I really do think she's changed the world of people with cancer in the UK. In the midst of one of the most conservative healthcare climates in the world, Patricia has steadily pushed forward the agenda for a more compassionate, respectful, and successful model of care, and she merits hero status for her efforts, in my book. Thanks very much for listening today. Don't forget to check out both the Cancer Options and Yes to Life websites to find out more about our work together. Also, a last reminder that coming up very shortly is our retreat day at Bhaktivedanta Manor on the 16th of June. Full details and booking on the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk. Click events in the left-hand sidebar. And lastly, registration is now open for the Yes to Life 10K on the 6th of October in Victoria Park, London. It's a brilliant way to support the work of Yes to Life, so please consider signing up. It has its own website, which is at yestolife10k.org. So that's yes to life, yestolife, number 10k.org. Hope you can join me again for next week's Yes to Life show. Goodbye.